98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
Here's what we've got. Everything we've been talking about, you get it all in one prime location. The 4 o'clock segment, we call it the 4 o'clock reset. We hit the reset button on the show, start it over, give you our takes on everything going on in sports, everything we've been talking about so far today. You just heard Sandy mention it a moment ago, coming up about an hour from right now. Masahiro Tanaka and the New York Yankees hosting Zach Greinke and the Houston Astros in the American League Championship Series Game 4. Of course, this is a very must-win type situation for Yankees. They don't want to go down 3-1 staring at Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole. Meanwhile, it's also a moment for Zach Greinke to have his signature moment in the postseason.
It's been great to have Greinke. When he got to Houston right after the deadline, we immediately embraced him and kind of introduced him to what we do and how we game plan. And, you know, it's funny, the first game that he had was against the Rockies, so he was right back into the NL West. And I was really worried about him having to pitch against a team that had so much familiarity with him. I was hoping that when we got him, part of the advantage is that a lot of teams in the American League hadn't seen a ton of him. And so I apologized to him that, man, your first start's going to have to be against the Rockies. And he said, no, it'll be okay. I'll get to see if you guys know what you're talking about.
A.J. Hinch talking about Zach Greinke. He's given up 9 earned runs so far in this postseason.
Yeah, listen, he hasn't been what they needed him to do. He hasn't. They may still win the World Series, but not because of him. They'll do it because of Verlander and Cole and the offensive weapons. I mean, this could be Greinke's signature moment for them. Go out there and win this game against the Yankees, and you put the Astros in complete control. There's no way they lose this series if they're up 3-1 because they got Verlander, because then the Yankees would have to beat Verlander and Cole in back-to-back games, and that just doesn't happen.
ASU getting rave reviews for their HBO 24/7 appearance last night.
I'm always a guy that lets players know where they stand. I don't believe in belittling players or belittling coaches. I do it my way. It is generally with a conversation in my office, quietly. You know, when I took this job, everybody was saying, well, he's old school, right? He's old school. No, I'm right school. I just do what's right. You know, and right's never been wrong. It's always right.
Herm Edwards is a big star on that show as well. A Hard Knock style show on HBO was a big hit.
Yeah, it was basically an hour commercial for ASU. Spoke with ASU today, and man, those coaches, they're out there recruiting. They're hitting the phones and the text messages and connecting with these kids, making sure they watched it, making sure they didn't watch it, that it's coming up again. They're expecting the greatest recruiting class in ASU history this coming season. And it could happen. They are in with a lot of potential to land a lot of 4- and 5-star recruits that haven't signed yet.
Thursday Night Football tonight, the Chiefs and the Broncos. James Palmer today on the NFL Network says Patrick Mahomes' ankle injury for the Chiefs, who are on a 2-game losing streak, is worse than people think.
That ankle is legit. It's a legit injury. I've been told that by multiple people. Andy Reid has talked about how it is bothering Patrick Mahomes, and multiple people that know about the injury told me it's probably worse than most people think it is. And speaking with the Broncos, they're well aware of it, but at the same time they said, we can't think about it at all. With as talented as Patrick Mahomes is, he can probably beat you on one leg, and we know the injury is not going to knock him out of the game.
It's not a huge sample size, but they've never had a 3-game losing streak with Mahomes under center.
No, you really worry about this team right now. Something's wrong, and I'll tell you who's getting the most criticism there is Andy Reid. Andy Reid's taking a little bit of a beating for the play calling and, you know, the lack of running game with that team right now, and so we'll see if the offense changes a little bit tonight against Denver.
Vance Joseph, Cardinals defensive coordinator, today on the return of Patrick Peterson and how much he will settle them down defensively.
A lot. You know, obviously having your number one corner back, I mean, it helps the overall game plan. It helps Murphy. It helps Brock. It helps us to have a clear idea, you know, in the coverage plan, what should happen. You know, so, again, he's excited. He's in great shape, and I'm looking forward to watching him play his first game.
Peterson had said yesterday, the first 3 games in particular, he was very upset at some of the bonehead decisions that his teammates were making on the field. Without him, he'll obviously be a big help on the field.
It'll be huge to get him back. How much does he fix the rest? We'll find out. Like, how much does he help the rest of the defense? We'll have a pretty good answer after Sunday.
And he's going to need all the help they can get, because Saquon Barkley looks like he is going to be back this week.
No doubt in my mind. You know, I know that, obviously, even though if I want to be out there as much as I can is ultimately really not up to me. It's going to be up to the team doctors and the trainers and the coaches. And I know that I feel confident enough that whatever they need my role, my responsibility to be, I'm going to be able to do it for the team.
He and Evan Engram both practiced in full today for the Giants.
Big to get Barkley back, because now you've got a threat of a running game. Jones has been forced to throw too many passes down the field, trying to get a lot of passes in the tight windows, throwing a lot of interceptions. So, to get him back and have a little bit more balance in that offense will give them a better chance.
And to wrap up the 4 o'clock reset, Daniel Jones, the quarterback of the New York Giants, whom once upon a time, about 2 weeks before the NFL draft, the Cardinals, in one of their 30 visits that they were allowed with players they could draft, chose Daniel Jones as a guy to have a meeting with, a sit-down visit with, which was surprising in the moment, given that it seemed like the choice was either going to be select Kyler Murray number one or keep Rosen and pick a defensive player.
Well, you only had 30 visits, right? You were allotted 30 visits. And when I reported that on April 12th, there was a lot of people shocked by that. And a lot of, why are they bringing in Daniel Jones? Why are they meeting with Daniel Jones? Why is that one of their 30 visits? They're wasting their time. Here's the reality. They really like Daniel Jones. They like them better than Josh Rosen. The Cardinals would doing their due diligence for this reason, okay? And here's the reality. They would have selected Daniel Jones in this draft if they had traded down to a spot and he was still available, because they liked him better than Rosen. Now, the reason that they met with him was simply because there was still a possibility at that time of an offer coming in that they believed that could have made them trade down. Obviously, over the last couple of weeks, they finalized that they were going to take Murray and nothing was going to distract them from that. But on April 12th, they were meeting with Jones because there was still a chance that if they get blown away with an offer, they'll move down. Now, they didn't know at the time what the Giants were going to do at number 6, but they were just trying to see, okay, they liked Jones better than Rosen. And if they had moved down to 12 or 13 and Jones was still on the board, or they moved down to 15 or 16 and Jones was still on the board, he would have been the pick. And they would have still got rid of Rosen. And Daniel Jones would have been the guy. So instead of Kyler Murray replacing Rosen, it would have been Daniel Jones. So in some ways, it tells me that they soured on Rosen. They did. They soured on Rosen a little bit, and that they really liked Daniel Jones, again, more than they liked Rosen.
Yeah, but
they could have drafted him.
But there would have been inherent risk involved in doing something like that, because let's say, hypothetically, you trade down to 15 with the hopes that Daniel Jones is going to be there. Daniel Jones goes number 6 to the New York Giants, or maybe he goes number 8 somewhere else, or number 10 somewhere else. Now you've made this risky trade down from the number 1 spot in the hopes of landing a quarterback that's not there anymore. You would have been stuck with Josh Rosen in that circumstance. That would have been a really risky play by the Cardinals to move down with the hopes that the quarterback they were comfortable with taking was still there, but with the knowledge that if he wasn't there, you were going to be stuck with the guy that you didn't like very much.
I can assure you that they wouldn't have, if they had moved down, it wasn't to be just because they liked, they were going to draft Daniel Jones. Obviously, if you're going to move down that many spots, you have no idea who's going to be there.
Well,
you have no idea.
Yeah, I understand that. But by moving down that many spots, you're accepting the fact, hey, Josh Rosen might very well be our quarterback next year.
Yes.
And in retrospect, thank goodness that didn't happen.
No.
Because I don't know where we would be right now with Josh Rosen at quarterback. I don't think we would be where we're at right now. I don't think we would have near the same level of confidence. Even though he was going into his second year with a guy like Cliff Kingsbury calling the plays, I don't think we'd feel nearly as settled at that position as we do right now with Kyler Murray. It would have been a big risk for them to do that.
The Cardinals actually went to Duke to work him out. And there's a lot, and I'm going back to my notes here from April 12th. They liked how smart he was and his good decision making. He was well coached. He was accurate. Really good athlete. Could get out of the pocket, make plays with his feet. Good on boots and play action. They just really thought he was going to be a good pro. But they wanted to keep their options open, and they did like him a lot more, not a little bit more, a lot more than they liked Josh Rosen. So that's why on April 12th, they met with and spoke with and worked out the Duke quarterback.
Herm Edwards, he was the star of the show last night on HBO, but heading into the biggest game since he's been on the Tempe campus, will he deliver this Saturday? We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. 80% chance of rain, 53 degrees, 15 mile per hour winds. Chris Cartman on his Twitter account. He covers ASU for SunDevilSource.com. Tweeted out that is your forecast at weather.com for this weekend's massively huge implications all over the board between ASU and Utah. No, it's not good, but I'm sure for our next guest, the beat writer who covers Utah for the Salt Lake Tribune, it's just another day at the office. Kurt Cragthorpe, he's our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. He joins us live from Salt Lake City with our look at Utah. Kurt, how you doing? I'm Dave. This is Gamble. Thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Yeah, good to be with you guys.
We've had a lot of discussions this week just on how two of the primary Sun Devils offensive players were guys that were heavily recruited by Utah. Both Jaden Daniels and Eno Benjamin were guys that Utah were very interested in signing.
Yeah, absolutely true. And what those guys probably wouldn't be featured players this year, just the way it's worked out with Zach Moss having just a good career as a running back and Tyler Huntley as a senior quarterback. But if you were drafting, maybe you would wish you could have Eno and Jaden to keep them away from the Sun Devils because they're obviously very good players. And Eno in particular was terrific against Utah last year with 175 yards. So I'm really looking forward to that matchup again on Saturday.
What's been the vibe around Utah when it comes to Jaden's a true freshman season that he's had so far, what he's done for the Devils, and maybe in the context of what he could have done for the Utes, but just in general, how he's been able to impact this team as quickly as he has. What's sort of been the reaction among Utah fans and Utah coaches?
Yeah, I thought Whittingham used the word exceptional to describe how Jaden's played as a true freshman, and they obviously knew he was a dynamic guy. Ironically, it was a year ago this weekend that he visited Utah when the Utes hosted USC, and the Utes played really well that night, and the program was really on an upswing, and they thought they made a good impression on him. But obviously, the Devils did a great recruiting job, and clearly, the thinking around Salt Lake is that what's played out for Jaden being able to start as a freshman kind of justified his decision. And obviously, the way Tyler Huntley's playing, maybe Jaden would have redshirted here. Maybe he would have been the backup and had a great chance to start next year. But being able to play in 2019 has really worked out for him in Tempe.
We know matchups and styles make games. ASU has kind of had Utah's number since they came into the Pac-12, and even in the last 2 years. I mean, last year ASU got a 38-20 win. N'Keal Harry was fantastic in that game. So was Eno Benjamin. What do you think it's been? Why does Utah not match up well against Arizona State, at least in the past?
The one thing that really comes to mind is speed. I particularly remember the 2012 game at Sun Devil Stadium, 37-7, and Utah just looked like they didn't even belong on the field with ASU, just from a speed standpoint. Now, the Utes have caught up in that department. That's been a huge emphasis of their recruiting. They do have better athletes than they've ever had across the board. So I think they will match up a little better. But like you say, even as recently as 2 years ago, Arizona State just dominated the game at Rice-Eccles Stadium. It was 30-3 late in the fourth quarter until Utah scored a late touchdown. So, yeah, for whatever reason, it just has not been a good matchup for Utah, and we'll see what happens this time.
Kurt Cragthorpe, he covers the Utah Utes for the Salt Lake Tribune. He's our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show as we're previewing ASU and Utah's matchup Saturday. Down here, we're looking at this as arguably, and I don't even know if there's much of an argument, the biggest game, at least conference game, certainly, that Herm Edwards has coached, given what's on the line. I know this isn't the biggest game Kyle Whittingham has ever coached. He's the third longest tenured coach in all of college football. But are the implications, are the suggestions of the implications as strong in Salt Lake as they are down here?
I'm going to say no, only because even if the Utes do beat the Sun Devils, they still need help from somebody against USC. Now, ironically, maybe the Sun Devils turn around and beat USC in Tempe and end up helping the Utes. But you can't kind of say it's a winner-take-all scenario from Utah's standpoint just because they lost to USC and the Trojans have the tiebreaker over them. So they know they need some help eventually. But it clearly is a big game. And what they do know is what we've talked about already, that that they're 2-6 in the Pac-12 era against ASU, and they need to reverse that. And ironically, even after losing to the Devils last year, the Utes got the help they needed from Oregon against ASU. So they're hoping for a similar scenario with USC. But they know that, and particularly in the Tyler Huntley era, these last two games, that ASU has been really tough on him and actually ended his season last year with a broken collarbone.
ASU went to East Lansing this year and beat Michigan State. They played Michigan State last year. It's nice to get that Power 5 conference win and play a good Power 5 conference team. And if the Pac-12 is going to, get somebody into the playoff system, you got to have a good non-conference schedule. Why is it that Utah's schedule this year does not have any Power 5 conference teams in it?
Yeah, I think what you're looking at is that maybe the excuse is that schedules are made so far in advance, but for a long time, the Utes were trying to get traction in the Pac-12 and just didn't feel up to scheduling ambitiously, I think is the best answer. Now, they've taken steps to solve that. They have Florida home and home in 2022 and 23, which goes against my argument that it's hard to schedule in a short time frame. But that does illustrate that they're very conscious of that, of needing to upgrade the schedule. But the previous athletic director, for all the good things he did, was just reluctant to make the schedule too daunting. And potentially, to your point, it could come back to haunt them, but that would probably be a good problem to have, I guess.
I've never really been a fan of Huntley's, but he's doing a good job this year. Obviously, the change in offensive coordinator to Andy Ludwig, from the outside looking in, it seems like it's really worked for the Utes. Tell me about that. Why did they make the change, and how is it working?
Yeah, why they changed, I suppose the best explanation is that Troy Taylor, the offensive coordinator, just took a head coaching job at Sacramento State. Now, there's some suggestion that maybe that leaving wasn't totally his own idea. But as ASU knows, he's done a pretty good job at Sacramento State, and they've won some games in the Big Sky Conference besides being competitive in Tempe. But in any case, they brought back Andy Ludwig, who had been here 10 years ago, actually ending with a Sugar Bowl victory over Alabama before he went to about four different schools in the last 10 years. And he has truly done a great job, particularly with Huntley. Tyler's a different guy this year. Now, again, based on his history against the Sun Devils, I look at this as a checkpoint game for him. He's thrown six interceptions against ASU in the last 2 years. And so he literally has not thrown an interception in six games this year. Well, if he has another good game against ASU, I think that'll be kind of a seminal moment in his career. He doesn't have what you'd call a signature win, really, in his career, and this would be the closest thing to that, just based on the struggles he has. But he has been very efficient, and sometimes the word efficient doesn't do him justice, because he does throw the ball down the field a fair amount and completes a high percentage, and guys seem to be getting open and making plays for him, and the running game helps him too, so it all fits together. But he just looks much more decisive, I would say, if there's one attribute to describe his improvement.
Kurt, we appreciate the time. Thanks for coming on for a few. We appreciate it.
Okay, good to talk to you.
You got it. Kurt Cragthorpe, he is the beat writer, covers Utah for the Salt Lake Tribune. He joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, your family-owned dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Gambo spent his whole summer shooting down D'Angelo Russell rumors to the Phoenix Suns. And based off of one photo shoot, it's very clear we're going to ask him to do it again.
Oh, no.
That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Son of a gun.
Blitz the Bayou. Text Blitz to 620-620.
All right, let's do this thing.
Blitz the Bayou.
Isaac Moya.
Isaac? From the Love Boat?
Isaac from the Love Boat.
Oh, my God, I loved that guy. He was a great actor.
Isaac Moya. M-O-Y-A from Phoenix.
The Love Boat.
You have 10 minutes to call 602-260-9870. 602-260-9870. 9870. Again, we're looking for Isaac Moya to call in the next 10 minutes, 602-260-9870, to get you qualified for the grand prize trip to New Orleans in our Blitz the Bayou presented by Pepsi. Isaac Moya is our qualifying winner today, 602-260-9870. And now all I can do is picture Isaac the bartender from The Love Boat.
The Love Boat.
Because of you. I appreciate that. Let's get an update on our Twitter poll question of the day with Sandy Charles.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update. Presented by Sanderson Ford.
Sandy, what you got for us today?
Okay, who do you consider to be the Arizona Cardinals' face of the franchise? Here are your options. Larry Fitz, Kyler Murray, KK, Cliff Kingsbury, or other?
Still Fitz, but it's obvious it's going to be. It's not there yet. It's not there yet.
Who will be the face of the franchise when Fitz is gone?
Well, I think everybody would have voted for Kyler in that circumstance, don't you think? Probably.
It's still Fitz.
But it's still Fitz. It's still Fitz. What's the what are the results so far?
Fitz is running away with it, 75%. Kyler has 23%, and then it split 1% Cliff and 1% other.
Yeah, the conversation was kind of born from a comment Cliff Kingsbury had made yesterday about how Kyler Murray is getting better at picking up on the responsibilities of being a face of a franchise. You always have to be on. You can't have a bad day. We played that soundbite for Shane Doan yesterday, and you could hear him laughing behind the soundbite. And Shane said, you're right. You can't. You're not allowed to have an off day. When you're the face of the franchise, you have to be nice and gracious and kind to everybody because you represent the organization at all times at its highest level. And that's just the gig. That's how it goes when you're the face of the franchise.
I remember that with Doan. It was like, what happens when you're having a bad day? What happens when you need a shoulder to cry on? Like, who do you go to? Because you can't show a weakness to the other players. You're the leader.
What did he say? A trainer or an assistant coach that he used to go into the office?
He went to Stan, the equipment manager.
Stan, the equipment guy. That's who it was. So, D'Angelo Russell, Devin Booker, and Karl Anthony Towns, they are all on the cover of Slam magazine for their NBA preview issue. They're all wearing throwback jerseys of the organizations they currently play for. Karl Anthony Towns is wearing a Kevin Garnett jersey, Books in a Charles Barkley jersey, and D'Angelo Russell's wearing a Tim Hardaway jersey,
yes.
Right?
Yep.
So, and this is their preview issue, and it's Goodfellas. That's what it's titled on the cover. So they accompany it with a 10-minute video of the three of them. And at the end of the video, D'Angelo Russell says, man, we're having so much fun. I don't want this to end.
I love y'all, man. I'm going to cry over here for a little second. I'm emotional, man. This isn't normal. This is not normal, man. I ain't going. Let me let this marinate for a second. I'm going to let this marinate for a second. This little aura we create, I'm going to sit in this little bubble for a little longer.
There is a part of this that did not make the video, but did make the story. Okay. The accompanying story in Slam magazine. Russell jokes towards the end of the day, quote, we got to do this again when we're all on the same team. Nah, don't cut it. He says to our rolling cameras. Y'all got it on footage when we're all on the same team. I ain't going to tell you which team because I don't know. We're going to do this again.
Here we go.
Close quote.
Oh, no. Here we go. Listen, D'Angelo Russell's the one saying this, not Devin Booker, not Karl Anthony Towns. Now, the guy, and I called it purgatory earlier, the guy's basically in purgatory.
It's a very nice purgatory to be in,
It's a nice purgatory. He's with the Golden State Warriors, who probably have no intention of keeping him past this season. He had an unbelievable year with the Brooklyn Nets. He was the face of their franchise. He led them to the playoffs. He did everything. He was an all-star. And then they turned their back on him. They went for the combination of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Garnett. So they turned their back on D'Angelo Russell because
Irving and Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant. Did I say Kevin Garnett?
You said Kevin Garnett.
Kevin Garnett.
That's
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Obviously, they needed the money, so they couldn't keep D'Angelo Russell. They let him go. There was a lot of speculation that, from a lot of national media that he would end up here in Phoenix with his boy, Devin Booker. I shot that down all summer long. Took a lot of heat on Twitter for it. A lot of heat. Things got actually ugly over at times. It was not fun. It was not pleasant to tell everybody D'Angelo Russell wasn't coming here, but he wasn't coming here. And now D'Angelo Russell's bringing it back up. We're going to play together. He didn't say he's going to come to the Suns. He said, I have no idea what team it's going to be. But he's the one that's hopeful because he's the one that's in the bad situation. He's the one that's on a team that really doesn't want him for the long haul. They just wanted to get something out of losing Kevin Durant and Andre Iguodala. And they just, you know, they just wanted to come away with something. They could trade him and get something for him, but it doesn't look like he is long for the Golden State Warriors.
No, it's not that Devin Booker's in a great situation. I mean, they don't win in Phoenix under him, but there is a belief, obviously a strong belief, that he is going to be the guy who gets them out of this muck, and they're paying him to be the guy who gets them out of this muck, and he's got that responsibility on his shoulders. So D'Angelo Russell's in a very unique, odd, weird situation. I totally agree with you there. Look, I know you spent all summer being the Grim Reaper about D'Angelo Russell to the Suns. I get it. I know people weren't happy about it. I know it made you unhappy because every single day you had to answer questions about it and kill dreams and snuff out hopes and fans were kind of taking it out on you. I get all of that.
Yeah, Twitter could be an ugly place.
I'll tell you this right now. I don't know about all three of them getting together. But given the very nature of the NBA and how easy it is for guys to force their way out, I wouldn't be surprised if at some point two of the three are together somewhere in the next couple of years. I mean, that...
Two of the three. I'll buy two of the three.
It's just two. We have seen time and time and time again in this league, man. If you're a superstar and you're not happy where you're at, it's easy for you to get out. It's common for you to get out. It's throw a little fit here, say something on Twitter there, go to a hair salon and put something out on social media. I mean, and not that Eric Bledsoe was a superstar, but given the volatility of the NBA in general, I wouldn't be surprised at all if two of these three, and I include Booker in that group, if two of these three aren't together somewhere in the next few years. I just hope it's here.
Could the Warriors keep him? He's a combo guard. He could play in a three-man backcourt once Thompson returns. I mean, it's possible. I don't know. It's possible. There was a lot of speculation that they got him just to swap him, that's why they got him, just to possibly swap him. So I don't know. I mean...
But you know how it goes when stories like this come out.
Yeah.
It makes Suns fans very nervous. Very nervous because we.
But what did Devin Booker say to us at Media Day?
Said he wants to be here and there's nowhere else he wants to be. He's very committed. Absolutely.
I've been here through the downtimes. I want to be here when it's good. There is no indication, none, no. Zero, that Devin Booker ever wants to leave the Phoenix Suns.
And I'm not trying to suggest there is. I just know things change in a New York minute in this league. That's all.
They do. They do. Yeah.
And I just hope that's not what happens here. And I hope B, the Suns don't do anything drastically stupid to try to accommodate wishes to get these three guys together. Because I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know if Devin Booker, Karl Anthony Towns, and D'Angelo Russell would be the trifecta that would lead to a bunch of titles.
Can't trade him till December 15th. You'll probably get Thompson back. You could get Thompson back a little bit after that. He's a 23-year-old all-star. He's young. He could shoot. He's a good basketball player. So we will wait this out until December 15th. And somewhere in November, late November, or early December, there will be speculation on what are the Warriors going to do with D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah.
And who knows? Maybe this comes up again. I mean, I doubt it, but who knows? Maybe it comes up again with the Suns. But obviously, D'Angelo Russell saying that we're all going to play together someday, you know, it does. It makes people's their eyebrows raise.
Isaac. You let us down.
Isaac
Moya from Phoenix did not call, which means...
He's probably hanging out with Doc on the Love Boat.
Caller number 10, and Gopher, too, while you're at it. Caller number 10 Julie. At 602... Oh, I loved Julie when I was a kid.
Did you?
So I had a big crush on Julie from the Love Boat. 602-260-9870. Caller number 10... You will be qualified to blitz the Bayou presented by Pepsi and perhaps win a trip to go see some football and eat some gumbo in the Big Easy. If you're caller number 10 at 602-260-9870. He started the season all tucked away in Toronto, and now Daniel Hudson is four wins away from being a World Series champion. The Nationals pitcher, Huddy, former Diamondback, will join us next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Here's the kick now. The pitch, fastball, is hit in the air to left center field. Robles going for it. He's under and waiting. And he makes the catch! He makes the catch! Bang! Zoom down the fireworks! The
out of the National League Championship Series, and the guy who got that final out, a very familiar face to all of us.
Daniel Hudson. I always say this, right? I root for people, not teams. This is a guy I've been rooting for many, many years, and I know a lot of Diamondback fans are too. Daniel Hudson going to the World Series, and he joins us right now on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Huddy, Burnsy, Gambo, how are you today?
Good, man. How you guys doing?
Oh, good, man. So good to see you get to the World Series. But what's it been like? I mean, these last 2 years, 3 years, the Pirates, the Rays, this year the Angels, then you get cut and you're released, and then Toronto signs you, and then you get traded. Man, it looks like, it seems like you've been on six or seven different teams in the last 3 years.
Yeah, it's definitely been a crazy couple of years since I left the desert, man. I've been kind of all over the place, but you know, it's been a wild ride. It's been a lot of fun. You know, obviously this year getting to the World Series and stuff is exciting, and you know, we're really, really pumped to get going, man.
Have things, first of all, congratulations on everything that has happened in your life the last few days, because, man, you've got enough to write a book with everything that's gone down, the birth of your third child, going to the World Series, winning the National League Championship Series. Have things settled down for you, or are things even kind of somewhat into a routine for you, or is that impossible given where things are right now?
Not really. It's been a crazy few days, man. It's been a crazy week for sure. I actually, since we swept, I got to come home for a couple of days, and you know, I'm hanging out with the girls right now, and I'm gonna head back tonight on the red eye and start getting ready for the World Series.
I know you pitched for the Dodgers, but from as long as I remember, you always hated the Dodgers. What was it like? You pitched in all three games against L.A. You won that thing. What was it like to defeat the Dodgers?
Man, that was cool, man. Obviously, yeah, like you said, I played there last year, but I wasn't around for the end of the season. I was on the injured list, and you know, I didn't get to go to any of the playoff games or any of the World Series games, so... You know, it definitely was, you know, there was a little bit in the back of my mind, maybe trying to get a little payback for him. But, you know, at the same time, though, man, it's just, you're just going out there trying to get three outs, man. I'm not really worried about who it's against or holding any grudges. But, yeah, you know, it was pretty cool.
Was it strange facing A.J. Pollock with the Dodgers, facing Paul Goldschmidt with the Cardinals? Was that a strange feeling?
Yeah, man, it's definitely weird. Obviously, playing with those guys for so long, you know, Goldie and AJ, and you know, playing those guys with so much on the line was definitely crazy, man. You know, I don't really know any other way to explain it other than that. You know, it's just it's one of those things where, you know, you just gotta try to focus and try to get those guys out.
Daniel Hudson, former member of the Diamondbacks, on his way to the World Series now with the Washington Nationals. He's our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Back in town for at least a little bit before he heads back out before the start of the World Series next week. The reaction to your story over the last 72 hours or so, with not being there for game one, both good and bad, the reaction, was it largely positive for you in terms of the support that you got? Because I know there were some people out there who thought you should be with your team, but you made the decision to be with your wife and your family. What was your general takeaway from how people reacted to your decision, Daniel?
Yeah, you know, everybody, I knew the knee-jerk reaction was gonna be probably overwhelmingly positive. I knew there was going to be some people out there, you know, trying to stir some stuff up, you know, but I wasn't really too worried about that, all the outside noise, man. I got my support from, you know, the organization, all my teammates, all my coaches, everybody was behind me 100% to miss game one. You know, I really, my family's my number one priority, man. And to be there for my wife, I think I told everybody that she was actually due on the 14th, and with my first two children, they went a couple days late, both of them. So now you're looking at, you know, 15th, 16th, 17th. Now you're looking at potential game six or game seven if we got there. And I just figured, you know, game five's in LA. I can shoot home in between the series. And if we win in L.A., then I'll just, you know, try to not miss game one. But, you know, I figured a game one is better to miss than a game six or seven. And everybody agreed. And we just kind of went from there, man.
I remember texting you after you guys eliminated the Dodgers. And I remember you saying that you were coming home to Phoenix. You're going to have your third child. At that time, did you feel like you were going to be able to make it for game one?
Yeah, I thought I was going to. Since we were trying to induce labor, we weren't doing it 100% naturally, obviously. And, you know, everybody that comes in that have naturally started childbirth, they get priority over the beds. So we were hoping that maybe we could get snuck in there Thursday morning before, and, you know, hopefully they could go home Friday morning, and then I could jump on a flight and potentially get to St. Louis Friday night. But the way things worked, we weren't able to get a bed till Thursday night. And once we kind of figured that out, I was like, all right, well, I'm missing game one. You know, not a big deal. I'll just watch it from the hospital, and hopefully they don't need me.
I'm curious, with all the stops that you've made in your career since you left Arizona, why is Arizona still home for your family?
We just love it here, man. We made our roots, man. Our roots are here for good. We love the area we live in down in Southeast Chandler. We love the area. We love our neighborhood. We love all the friends that we've made down here. Our kids love it. My oldest started kindergarten this year, so she started school. And, you know, we love it here, and we're going to stay here for good.
You'll be a free agent after this, you know, World Series is over. Any thoughts about trying to come back to Arizona? Do you have any idea what the future holds in store?
Not really. I don't really have any idea what the future has in store. I would love to come back and play here, but, you know, that's really not really up to me. You know, I would love to stay as close as possible as I can to Arizona. So it makes, you know, the season easier on my family, you know, the travel a little bit easier. You know, obviously I played in Toronto and DC. I don't know if you can get any farther away from Arizona. So anywhere else would be closer, but at the same time, yeah, I would love to come back and play, but We'll see how things shake out. Obviously, I got, seven more games left with the Nationals. I'm going to focus all my energy into that, and then we'll see what happens after that.
When you look at this Nationals team, so many former Diamondbacks, from Max Scherzer to Adam Eaton, there's Chip Hale, there's Gerardo Parra, there's you, there's Fernando Rodney. I don't want to miss anybody.
Patrick Corbin.
Corbin. I mean, do you feel that? Do you sense this? Wow, there's a lot of Diamondback connections on this team.
Yeah, for sure, man. And obviously, Mike Rizzo was with the D-backs before he got the GM job in D.C. So obviously he was familiar with a lot of those guys too. And I don't know what it is about ex-D-backs going to D.C., but I think it made the transition for me really easy to kind of just step into that locker room. And, you know, I already know half the guys in there. You know, it wasn't too difficult to kind of transition from Toronto to the Nationals. I mean, I did go from the youngest team in baseball to the oldest. So, I mean, I kind of fit in that way a little bit more too. So I think that made it easier as well.
Well, good luck in the World Series. Good luck with the new addition to your family and juggling three adorable girls and all of that. And we really appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your day to join us here, because we know we've been chasing you down for the last couple of days, and we're very glad we made it work. So thanks for coming on, Huddy, and best of luck in the World Series, man.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
All right, Huddy, all the best.
Daniel Hudson joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, your family-owned dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. That was cool. That was really cool to hear him talk
he's
about
just
his experiences.
He's such a good person, yeah. And he's definitely one of those people that you root for.
They are both proteges of Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, and we were hoping that ours would be as good as theirs. Instead, ours is better than theirs. Talking about Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray next on the Burns and Gambo Show.